This is the Morning Crossfire on 92.3 Nigeria Info.
All right, good morning. 92.3 Nigeria Info, the nation's number one news, talk, and sports radio station. My name is Ifeemi Andrew. It's now 6 minutes past eight. Beautiful Friday morning. And, I will tell you this, an interesting conversation is about to unfold. My guest is already here with me in the studio. And, before we turned on the mic, I was asking him a few questions about the Bolian fish, if he's had it or he hasn't. He said he had fish, but Boli, not yet. So we are going to ensure that before he leaves the country, we have that sorted out. I'm talking about no other person. It is the Deputy High Commissioner from the UK to Nigeria. And he came into Port Harcourt yesterday.
That's right. Yeah, not my first visit, but got in yesterday.
Okay. All right. It's no other person than Mr. Ben Lerwell. I hope I got that correctly. Mr. Ben Lerwell Lejo. Did I get that correctly?
Not bad. I mean, my name is difficult to say. It's Ben Llewellyn Jones, but that was pretty good. Well done.
Oh, I did my best.
You did well.
So it's safe if we say Mr. Ben.
That's good.
All right. Thank you very much. So Mr. Ben is here with us, and we're going to have a great conversation. And top of it would be the relationship between Nigeria and the UK. And I'll tell you, it's been amazing because we know we have a lot of Nigerians in the UK.
Very many.
So tell us about that. I think we'll start off from there. Nigeria-UK relationship, it's really huge, and it's been a priority for the UK government over the years. Why has it remained that way? What really is responsible for that relationship? Or why has it become a top priority for the United Kingdom to keep Nigeria on its side, relationship-wise?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, the people-to-people contact, so many Nigerians living in the UK, so many Nigerian students who go to the UK, so many people for whom Nigeria is very familiar if you're in the UK. So there's that side of things. The second thing is our trading relationship is very strong. And the third thing is the kind of cultural sporting links. I mean, you know, Premier League, music, and Nollywood, you know, breaking through as well. So I just think, you know, London and Lagos particularly, but Nigeria and the UK are kind of twinned in many ways. And our relationship is a reflection of that.
When you mentioned sports, I was excited because Iwobi scored yesterday. Everton played Newcastle. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, that's a Nigerian doing great. So that's a good one. But at the moment, for so many reasons, some people have felt like maybe some interference may have occurred with the relationship, especially what's happening in the world now. Our heart goes out to everybody in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And people have looked at the position of the UK in that particular ongoing war between Russia and Ukraine. And I felt like, oh, we hope this doesn't affect the relationship that UK would have with Nigeria. How's that going, and what should Nigeria be looking at with regards to that and how it relates with the UK?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think what's happening in Ukraine damages the relationship the UK has with Nigeria. If anything, it strengthens it. You know, it shows the kind of value of countries that have the same democracies, that have the same kind of approach to human rights, that you know, that have a strong sense of how people should be free. And I think that's really important. So, but what's happening in Ukraine is hugely concerning, and the Nigerian government in the UN has been very clear that it's unacceptable that Russia invade Ukraine, and we've been very clear on that too. And I think a whole bunch of countries across the world have made that point very, very clear now to Russia. I guess the thing now is to try and de-escalate that war and to stop the invasion, stop people being killed and displaced. It's terrible.
Really terrible and sad. So we talk about Nigeria-UK trade relations, but before we do that, let me put this out. If you have any question whatsoever you would love to ask the British Deputy High Commissioner, all you need to do is send us a WhatsApp message. The number is 0809-030-6416. I'll take those again, 0809-030-6416. That is our WhatsApp number. And then on Facebook, you can also be part of the conversation at Nigeria Info PH, Facebook and Twitter. You can drop your comments. We would be taking those questions as we make progress on the show. So, Mr. Ben, back to you. What is the situation of UK and Nigeria's trade relation? And what kind of support has the UK, you know, offered businesses in Nigeria?
Yeah, so it's a very strong trading relationship. I mean, it's still dominated by oil and gas. And one of our key concerns is to try and diversify the trading portfolio that the UK has, the trading and investment UK portfolio has in Nigeria. And to be honest, there's benefits to Nigeria in that, because obviously oil and gas is one sector, but actually so many sectors, tech for example, are employing more and more people. The creative arts employing more and more people. So to diversify the UK's approach is also to assist with Nigeria to diversify its economy. And really what we try to do with trade investment is help to grow Nigeria's economy. And then separately but connected in some ways is the work we do on economic development with our overseas development assistance. And there, to be clear, we have programs. We have a specific program on manufacturing to help Nigerian manufacturers. We have other programs that are designed to help with infrastructure. So a whole series of things really to try and reach the problems we know that affect Nigeria's economy and make it difficult to grow businesses and to create jobs. So both those things, UK trade investment, but also growing Nigeria's economy, that's what we're about.
You mentioned programs there, and some programs, manufacturing and the rest of them. You care to share light on those? Like, you mentioned a few of them that we can know. What are those programs?
So we have a program called Manufacturing Africa, which specifically works with companies which are based in Nigeria to help them to raise finance, help them to have a business plan, help them to scale, help them to find business partners. I was in Lagos actually with Max NG, electric vehicle producer, who benefited from the program and making huge strides, electric motors essentially. So that's one. And I think others that are others may be less aware of, for example, we have a UK NIAF program which is focused on infrastructure and particularly on energy, and trying to assist the federal government to think through really to deal with Nigeria's energy problems, which, you know, the grid went down again a couple of days ago, huge problems. And looking also at how we can encourage through that off-grid energy solutions, renewable energy solutions, as well as on-grid too. And then we have through CDC, which is to be called British International Investment, direct investment into companies. I was with one yesterday, Indorama in Port Harcourt. Yeah, and they were absolutely excellent, and they benefited from two tranches of UK CDC investment, and we employ 1,100 people, I think, now in Port Harcourt. So, you know, really, really successful direct investment, but it's with a development lens, development focus to try and assist. And, of course, Indorama is part-owned by the community around it as well, which is really important.
All right, a great thing you mentioned Indorama, because I was about asking you, my next question would have been... we know Lagos and London has that relationship with other parts of Nigeria. And I was about mentioning Port Harcourt, Abuja, and maybe other cities, Delta State, and a couple of other states in the country. If this sort of relationship also would affect those other areas, or is it something that we are going to see in just maybe the major cities in the country?
Not at all. So, I mean, our relationship with Nigeria is total, and we have offices in Abuja, Lagos, and Port Harcourt, and other parts of Nigeria too. With that, we also have development programs that look at the north of Nigeria, Kaduna, Kano, Jigawa particularly. But here in Rivers, the work we've done with Indorama is not the only work we've done. I was at the University of Port Harcourt yesterday morning as well. I know there are challenges with the university, but there's one course running.
There's some strike.
Exactly, but there's one course running which we fund, which is on transitional energy, which has students there at the moment looking at solutions, so helping them to get a qualification, but also that qualification helping people with energy solutions here in Rivers. So, you know, I think there's a lot that we're doing across Nigeria, not just in the big cities. To be honest, you know, it's a massive country. You've got to get everywhere.
You have to get everywhere, because a lot of people need this aids and support to have a better life for themselves and, you know, improve our economy. You mentioned some of the sectors. I think there are a lot more sectors that we can look at. Despite the fact that you mentioned some key investment sectors, you talked about entertainment, sports, energy, and the rest of them, education is also very fundamental. And yeah, you talked about the program you have at the University of Port Harcourt. So what other sectors are you looking at? Is there any plans for the technological sector? You mentioned manufacturing, yes, but then what other sectors are available?
Yeah, so I mean, I think out with oil and gas, we looked at energy, but also we're looking at tech, fintech. So for example, trying to, Nigeria's got a great story on fintech and digital economy at the moment, trying to connect that up with UK business, UK investment. We have a digital access program specifically looking at how to help with the rollout of broadband across Nigeria, because, you know, that doesn't work unless more people can get online.
Yeah.
But also at the bottom end of that spectrum, helping people who've never been online to get online. And I think that's really important in terms of making the digital economy real. But we've also on education, you're right. I mean, so many Nigerian students going to the UK, but actually One of the real growth areas is people doing online courses and being offered those courses by UK institutions, you know, quality certificates, quality education. And that's a real thing we're pushing. And also partnering between UK institutions, schools and universities here to offer those kind of courses and to make them real and to make that work. And then we, the UK government, actually offer master's scholarships in the UK, achieving scholarships, which you know, we encourage people to apply for. I think the most recent round's just ended, but the next one comes up every year. A massive number of applications, again, from across Nigeria, not just the south, not just the north, across Nigeria. And really excellent scholarships, fully funded for a master's program in the UK. And it's, you know, education's key, not just a commercial opportunity, it's about investing back in, because those students, they come back to Nigeria, they have to. That's a condition of the scholarship, to work here and to Britain, to give back.
All right, sounds interesting. And I'm tempted to even, you know, visit the UK myself.
You're
part of the program. Excited. But then, before I go on with questions I have here, I think we just look at WhatsApp and I'll take a few questions from a listener. Sure. And this one is from Daniel White in Port Harcourt. He says, I need to understand why Nigerians are still being asked to take IELTS exams on English speaking country. He says, most annoying, the result expires as though one forgot how to speak English. You're currently the studio communicating with English, please, that should be looked into. And why is the IEITS fee so exorbitant? Had that become a revenue stream for the UK government? So that's over to you.
Sure. So, I mean, the IELTS tests, so different institutions in the UK set the standard that they would need to be confident about the level of English that people have going into study for their academic qualifications. So some universities don't require it, but some do. And the IELTS test is one of the qualifications that people can take, which universities may require.
Okay.
There are other ways for universities to accredit those people applying. But the IELTS test, the cost of the IELTS test is set commercially, but it's set to be competitive with other comparative tests.
Is it controlled by government?
No, it's not. It's not, but it's set to be competitive with other comparative tests.
All right.
So it's, I understand the frustration, I do, but you know, you also have to understand as well that for some of the courses that people are doing, they're quite technical. And reasonably, I think people need to be able to show the level of English that they can apply to that course. I mean, you know, I'm not an engineer, for example.
Yeah,
there are challenges in some of these things. So I do understand the frustration. We've heard it loud and clear, but I think for the institutions themselves, the question is really what level of English they need. That's the issue.
All right, because I look at it and say, well, English-speaking country, in fact, we have stats from the UK that have suggested that in Africa, you know, Nigerians speak better English. So now I'm saying, why do we then have to do this English again before we get access to school there? But now that you put it the way you just did, understandable, the institutions. But then, regardless of that, there are ways the government could come in, hopefully. Is that possible to see how these things can be looked at and perhaps not made to be as difficult as he's putting it to look like?
Well, I think we you know, the institutions are independent, right? They set the level they need. We don't try and control that. That's not reasonable. I think from us, our key thing really is we're trying to permit and allow and to facilitate students who want to go to the UK. And the sheer number of student applications that we get is great. It's very significant. So to be honest, government's focus is on making sure that we can process those visas and get them through, which I know is also a challenge. But, you know, that's really what we're trying to do. And you look at the alumni associations of UK universities in Nigeria, very many, very successful, hugely influential groups. So we feel that, you know, overall it's a positive experience, notwithstanding the challenges. But I do understand the challenges. I'm not immune to them, but I recognize the institutions themselves are the ones who have to consider this.
All right, well said. One more question before we move on. This person says, good morning, High Commissioner.
Good morning. Deputy.
Please, what is the transparency level for the recent health assistant care workers visa recently added to the shortage occupation list? Most of the care homes are deciding sponsorship for Nigerians and even demanding some form of payment.
Right. I mean, I'd have to look into that. Sorry, I'm not as familiar with that.
Okay.
Sounds like a very specific issue, but if that is an issue, do get in touch with the Deputy High Commissioner. We can think that through, because clearly, you know, it needs to be transparent. We don't want people to pay money. And unfortunately, in many places, you know, scams can occur around these issues. In this one, I just can't know, to be honest, but we'll look into it.
All right. They'll look into it, he says. Now back to me.
Yeah.
This is my question.
Your
question. So we talked about energy, oil and gas, which is very beautiful. But then we also are aware of the commitment of the UK to the environment. Yeah. And we know what the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson stand with climate change. So it brings me to my next question. Across the globe, climate change is becoming a problem. So how is the UK helping Nigeria tackle that and take climate actions that will save the environment?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge problem. In the COP26, which occurred, the Conference of Parties on Climate Change in the UK in Glasgow last year, was a big moment of kind of commitment, but also action. I think for us in Nigeria, it's an issue about energy transition, but also energy access. So many Nigerians just don't have access to energy. And even if they do, as we saw, 2 days ago, the grid goes down, you don't have access, even if you do have access. So it's about energy access, where we're working with off-grid energy suppliers and off-grid potential solutions to say, well, what can be done? How can we de-risk some of the money involved in this so we have more off-grid energy available out with kind of major urban centres? And then when it comes to energy access and on-grid, as I mentioned earlier, working with the federal government on the kind of solutions that could make energy supply and the grid itself still more effective and useful and, frankly, upgrade it, because it needs to be, so that we can have a functioning infrastructure system to supply energy across Nigeria. Mm. I mean, that's one part of it. The other part of it, to be honest, though, is the basic stuff, trying to encourage and work with Nigeria to stop gas flaring. You know, we don't need that carbon in the air. What can we do with that? Working with Nigeria to look at ways to take, for example, the VAT off solar home systems that come into Nigeria, because, in Kenya, there is no VAT on solar home systems, so it's cheaper to set up your solar homes. In Nigeria, unfortunately, that's not the case. So, that's one thing where the government could help, and we're encouraging that. And then also, to be honest, encouraging, in the right way, decisions that are difficult. We understand they're difficult, but around, say, for example, removal of the fuel subsidy, which does disincentivize at the moment many people from moving to more sort of low-carbon solutions.
That's a topic you really don't want to touch too often in Nigeria.
I know, I hear it.
When you take away subsidy, that means the price for a litre of petrol goes into another level. At the moment, we even have petrol scarcity. It's a problem.
I understand that, yeah.
And trying to tackle that one. So if there's an alternative source of power, maybe we have electric cars too.
Absolutely.
That could help.
Yeah.
But then we have to stabilize power production first before we talk about electric cars.
Well, I mean, you look at, so I was talking about MaxEnergy earlier. These guys are making electric bikes. Mm. They'd have batteries. They're going to power those batteries by solar. So actually, to be honest, the solution, I mean, to scale, it's difficult, but the solution is not to have kind of diesel or petroleum generation. That's not where we're going, right? So there are ways of doing this. It's not easy. I wouldn't pretend it is, but there are ways of doing this that move away from the need for subsidy and certainly move away from the need for diesel and petrol.
Okay, all right. This person here says on WhatsApp, good morning, please. What programs do you have for environmental profession? Because nothing seems to be happening. As Sarah sent in this message, I think you were talking about climate change and the environment and all of that. I think this person is an environmentalist or something,
right.
And he's seeking to know, is there such opportunity for people in that field in the UK? If you want to move to the UK and that's your profession,
yeah.
Is there a new program available for it? This is what he's saying.
I'm not aware of a program to move people from Nigeria to the UK in that respect, but we are doing work on the environment and the physical environment in Nigeria, which people perhaps may become involved in. I mean, particularly in the area of agriculture. So looking at seeds and seed production and yield and also animal vaccines. So, looking at ways to try and make the lived environment of Nigeria protected, but also make it more productive given the challenges now around agriculture and climate change. But as I said earlier, we're about trying to encourage development within Nigeria. So, we understand people go to the UK and that's great. But, actually, we're about trying to make things work here.
All right. It's 24 minutes past 8 this lovely Friday morning. And interesting conversation we're having in the studio. I'm here with Mr. Ben. I'm not going to attempt to pronounce the full name.
Go on.
He wants me to try. All right. Let me see if I can make it happen this time. Ben Llewellyn Jones.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
So I'm getting better.
Not perfect though, but pretty good.
Thank you. British Deputy High Commissioner. And we're talking about a lot of things, majorly UK-Nigeria trade relations. We talked about the climate. One important thing we should look at would be just recently, I think we had celebration for women around the world. Mm-hmm. It was International Women's Day. And in Nigeria, there was a lot of questions that came up, especially when a couple of bills were rejected on the floor of the House. Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that we had the wife of the vice president even sitting there, plenary, those bills were not approved, and there was a protest that came afterwards. And here in the state, I think the government of the state has been doing the best that it can to support women. I mean, for all of the local government councils, we have women as deputies. So it's something that's just the standard. It has to be a woman as deputy. But many would say more needs to be done. And it brings me to my next question now. What do you think about this year's theme?
Break the bias.
Break the bias. And what can be done actually to ensure that we break it? In Nigeria as well, if you know, the elections are just around the corner. Next year, we're having general elections. And people are saying, women, you need to come out now and participate. So what can we do to break the bias?
So, I mean, there's lots we can do. I mean, first, coming back to the, it was a real shame that those amendments didn't pass in the House. And I think that was, we looked at that with dismay.
Although, they're looking at it again.
I know. And I hope they do.
See what comes out.
Yeah, that would be great. And I think, you know, coming from a country where we've had two female prime ministers, very few people know this, but I think the majority now of our UK ambassadors, high commissioners across Africa are women, are female. You know, certainly within our public service and private sector, we have, you know, it sounds patronizing to say strong female representation. We have female leadership, full stop. So I think for us, you know, it's still lots to do, but we see that as the path that we hope Nigeria can itself move towards. I think when it comes to breaking the bias, there's lots. I mean, there was some excellent kind of commentary on Twitter about the small things that people do, you know, when you go to a meeting, who pours the drinks? Why is that?
It's crazy. It was even a debate at the State House of Assembly here with regards to the role of women in the sharing of properties, landed properties, especially. It's held with very high regards here. When the woman gets married from her own family, she doesn't get it, and then she goes to the husband's family, and then they're saying you can't get it here as well. So it keeps the woman in that empty space. And this is where we're looking at the UK government in partnership with the Nigerian government, some of the things that can be done to change the mentality of people about these things.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is awareness and socialization of how things could be, and showing people that's not a threat, it's actually an opportunity. And certainly I think for many people, seeing role models, female role models who make it to you know, kind of senior positions, particularly in places like politics, would help. You know, I'm always dismayed to see how few women there are in politics in Nigeria relative to the excellent human capital there is. And when you look at the business sphere, ironically or conversely, you see so many women in senior positions in the business sphere in Nigeria, but in politics not so much. And I think, you know, female role models that people can aspire to be and move towards, I think that's a big part of it. And then I think, to be honest, you know, just genuinely challenging everyone, taking the responsibility to challenge the bias, challenge the you know, the kind of potential violence. And what we also do as well from the UK side is to support, because, you know, the other end of the spectrum is violence, to be honest, against women, which is a huge problem across the world and here in Nigeria, but to support centres like the Mirabel Centre, the Sexual Assault Referral Centre, and try and help them to make sure that they can help people, and also help people to prosecute, frankly, those who've committed violence. There's a really good video in the UK at the moment, which has been released by government, which shows how kind of words can lead to action, and how shouting at somebody can lead to violence. And the message of the story is, well, step in, stop that. You know, if you're standing next to someone who's doing that, say, don't do that. You know, you can make a difference yourself. So I think that personal agency is what we need to encourage.
All right. Sensitization. That's the basics, and we need that across the country. There's a lot to talk about, Mr. Ben. A whole lot.
There is.
And I'm trying to put all of them in the little time that we have. I want to take us back a little bit to the issues of the environment we talked about. I don't know if you're aware, but here in Rivers State, we have a problem with the suit.
You do.
It's a huge problem. And we also have some environmental degradation at a very high level. The Ogoni cleanup is a major one. Recently, in a neighboring state, Bayelsa State, there was also an oil spill in one of the communities in Nimbe local government. And that spill lasted for weeks. And the damage there has been, I can't quantify. So it brings us back again, especially River State. Are there any plans, any programs, talks with authorities with regards to how perhaps we can tackle the soot problem that we have? First of all, and then with the Ogoni cleanup as well, if there have been conversations with the new HyPrep director and how that should work?
Yeah, so not with the new HyPrep director, but I mean with HyPrep over the years, and we're very keen to meet with the new HyPrep director actually, but over the years we've been talking and looking and trying to encourage action and trying to address some of the challenges that are well stated around HyPrep. I mean, I think one of the really positive things around the potential of the Ogoni cleanup is financially it's possible. The money is there. The question is how it's used, how it's applied, and with the consent of the community. So I know that the federal government's very keen to push on that. We've spoken to the Minister of the Environment, Honourable Minister of the Environment, about that. So we're keen to try and see what progress can be made now ahead of the election in 23. And I think there's real possibility and opportunity there. I mean, on the soot, I think I was last here about a year ago, which is too long, I know, but COVID's made it difficult to come. But the soot feels much less of a problem now than it was, but still a problem, no doubt. And I think a lot is to do with the action to tackle artisanal refineries. I think that is really important, to be honest. I think that, you know, that's hugely important.
Yeah.
But also, I think, again, you know, the real way to tackle it is to introduce clean energy that doesn't have any kind of burning at all, and to make that the default. And again, at Port Harcourt University yesterday, I was admiring their solar panels. They're looking pretty good, to be honest. And they're working, you know, the power went off, they carried on. So I think there are ways of helping, which, again, which we're trying to do in that respect. But yeah, it's not easy.
All right. And then lastly, before we let you leave the studio, our elections next year, democracy is a huge thing for us. And I mean, two democratic states. What should we learn? What is the UK offering to Nigeria, especially with the elections around the corner?
Yeah, I mean, it's hugely important. I mean, elections in Nigeria, you know, massively important in terms of the signal it sends around democracy, not just in West Africa, but across Nigeria. I think the key thing we'd say is, look, you know, we want every Nigerian vote to count, and we want there to be a credible and peaceful campaign and election. And I think a lot of responsibility rests on the candidates, and we're going to see those candidates fairly soon. But our message to them and any potential candidate, any potential aspirant is, you know, the conduct of the election is yours. You know, Nigerians are watching, we're watching too. And really, it's about what you do, your leadership, your direction, how you apply yourself that will make a difference to how that works.
All right. Thank you very much for your time. It's been really amazing having you here, the UK Deputy High Commissioner. And now he's laughing because we're about to go to his name again.
You're going to get it right, don't worry.
All right. I'll do my best. Mr. Ben Llewellyn Jones.
That was the best. Yeah. Well done. That's brilliant.
I'm pretty good at this. All right, thank you very much for your time. And thank you for being here. And just before you go, somebody sent a message and it says it's compulsory. It says I should ensure that you get to taste bully and fish before you go. So I'm going to ask Madam here to ensure that she gets you that, and you tell us what you think about it on your next visit.
That's a given. I'll do that.
It's really spicy. I have to tell you that first.
Fantastic.
But you'll love it.
I will.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And to have a wonderful time.
Cheers.